he's fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we find that this has happened automatically. We will see that a new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
And now I'm happy to turn the room back to Lori to continue the workshop.
Yay. Thank you.
Morning. I'm glad to hear them called the 10-step promises. I've only heard them as the hidden promises, which has always bothered me. But the 10-step promises is fine with me. I've been asked why I think they happen after step 9, and we're almost on to step 10, and I'll answer that question very shortly. I've just about finished step 9, but I did want to say one thing that I usually do say, and I had forgotten to say. And it came from someone asking me about making a particular kind of amends or not being able to make one. I have heard it said by some big book thumpers that you grit your teeth and you make your apology whether you believe it or not. And that is just not my experience. So it may be the experience of other people, but it certainly isn't my experience. My experience is the opposite. I don't know what I'm going to say. I can pray about it, I meditate on it, I focus on the harm that I've done, and if in fact I am truly ready to make this amends, the words come, and they come because most people hear tone much more than they hear words, and the words I may speak are not that significant as much as what I really look like and how I really feel. At least that's my experience, and so I work very hard on the concept of what harm did I do? So that I can really look at that harm and really understand how and why and what harm I did, so that when I apologize or when I make my amends, whatever that amends is, it comes from my heart. So I just wanted to say that there's some faith you have to have that the right words can come. And the other fact is, if you're open and ready to do it, and you don't say the exactly right words, and the person reacts in a slightly different way, then the other right words will come. You'll be more flexible. That's just been my experience. So I just wanted to say that. I could have gone on at length, on all of these, but time is short. That clock is still wrong. I think it's a. it's interesting how. I mean, it's slow. Yeah, that's what it is, and that's why it's always losing time. I've got to deal with steps 10, 11, and 12 this morning, and I want to spend most of my time on step 12 because I think our program needs it. I think that OA. Well, I know that OA is declining in numbers and face-to-face meetings, and the only thing that keeps OA at the same level as it was 5 or 10 years ago are the phone meetings. And I know that when I joined in 86, OA was at least twice, if not three times bigger than it is now. Sales of Lifeline magazine, instead of being in the 6,000-7,000, were in the 20,000s. And, people have many different theories about why this is so. I'm one of the ones who subscribe to the concept that recovery is the basis of carrying the message, and that we do not do, say, and act in a way that gives a sense of recovery to those who still suffer. So I wanted to talk about that at some length. But step 10 is very dear to my heart because it represents the second mistake I made in my relapses. If you recall the first mistake I made, I relapsed for about 7 years in this program, and the First mistake I made, and probably the most significant mistake I made, was not accepting that my body was abnormal and not abstaining from the foods and food ingredients and eating behaviors that that caused me the cravings. I accepted the idea that I could eat in moderation once I lost my weight. The diet idea, the diet ideal that is given in virtually every diet every diet I've ever been on and almost all the diets I've ever read. And that, of course, works for all kinds of people who are not like me. But if my body is abnormal and there are certain foods that set me off or certain combinations of foods or certain eating behaviors that set me off, and I believe there are, not accepting that notion, of course, will create relapses because my body will just go back into operation and I'll just want more and more and more. My body will want more and more and more. That was the first mistake I made. But the second mistake I made during my relapses, even while I was really eating healthy, which means that I probably wasn't eating the foods that caused me cravings and losing weight and trying to lose weight, there were times when I just went back to eating. I just, whatever it was, I went back to eating. And so that was another cause of my relapses. And interesting enough, I didn't discover this, and it was a step 10 mistake, so I'll just talk about that in a second, but I didn't discover this mistake until I was well on my road to recovery using the big book, after 7 years working with this guy who really read the big book, if you recall, I talked about him. I was listening to a series of tapes by Blaine, this guy from Winnipeg who has been such a careful analyzer of the book and stood, as I said, on Joe and Charlie's shoulders, in my opinion. And this was an excruciating series of recordings. They were cassette tapes that had been lent to me by a friend. And he was doing a big book study with another guy in a medium security penal institution where his assumption was, and probably correctly so, that the average educational level that the people had reached was pretty low. So he was explaining every single word in the big book and every single allusion to, who was Christopher Columbus, who was Galileo, and I'm listening, I'm just sort of, because I knew most of it. I mean, there was a lot of gold in there, but I was listening. Anyway, he finally got to step 10, must have been the 30th tape or something, and he said, step 10 is steps 4 through 9 done in the context of recovery. And it's not the way, I don't know if he said this, but he certainly applied it, it's not what is written on the wall. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. It's not simply an apology. It's not simply a sense of, oh, what did I do wrong? I'm sorry. It is much more than that. It is literally doing what you did in steps 4 through 9, but having recovered, you are now doing it as a step 10, not as a steps 4 through 9. And I can't remember all that he said about this, but I remember where I was driving when he was saying it. I was driving up, it doesn't matter where it was, around Christmas time, must have been 1993. And, That struck me, and I've studied the big book quite a bit, and I realized how true that was, because in my relapses before, I think I already gave this example, maybe I didn't. I've been talking a lot, so I don't remember what I've said or what I've said to individuals. There were times, my first year in the program was actually, for this sort of guilt-ridden Jewish guy, an exercise in learning how to be happy, how to accept happiness. Because I grew up in a household. As I said, none of my family suffered in the Holocaust. My grandparents came over in the early 1900s. But my grandmother and grandfather were quite active, both politically and socially. And my mother told me that before the war, my grandmother was the most joyous person, and after the war she had sunk into a kind of depression. So, and I went to Jewish schools, and I had some teachers who were survivors, and this whole sense of how can you be happy when other people have suffered or are suffering. I mean, it wasn't just sort of the 6 million Jews, it was all the people who died and all the people who are still alive who are suffering, sort of this sense of, you're happy, but how can you be happy? Other people are sad. And my first year in the program was learning how to accept the fact that I was really happy. I was married, in love, my kids were young and just wonderful, my parents were alive, and I had a great relationship with them. But then things began to happen in my life, actually my wife's life, not my life. My wife, within the period of about, it's safe to say within a period of a year, lost her immediate family. Her father died first. Her sister died within 6 months, much too early. Her father was early, but her sister was much too early. And we discovered after her father died that her mother had Alzheimer's, and within a year or 2 years didn't know us, and we had to take care. I don't feel sorry. I mean, worse has happened to people, but I didn't know how to handle this. I did the best I could, and I would, you know, I would handle all the pressures. Did I talk about this or not? No, okay. Because I did talk about it with someone. And I would find myself yelling at my kids for little things that they did, and then apologizing right away, you know. But I didn't do steps 4 through 9 on my entire situation. I didn't sort of write down, you know, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my sister-in-law. I love them. I mean, they were just most wonderful people. You know, my kids, my wife, you know. And I didn't write down, why are they on the list? You know, my wife was on the list, would have been on the list if I had done it, because she was doing the right thing, but I didn't want her to do. You know, she was taking care of her father. She was taking care of her sister, who was trying to take care of her mother, but she was taking care of both her mother and her sister. You know, I mean, all these things. And she was away from the house, and I was resenting. And every time her sister phoned, I would resent and then also feel guilty at the fact that I was resenting, that she was phoning. I mean, I'm sure many of you have experienced this. But I wasn't dealing with it. I wasn't writing it down. And where was I? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, and dealing with the fears of maybe my wife's going to die soon. Maybe she'll suffer. You know, I mean, all these things that come up. Instead, I was apologizing to my kids, because that's how I interpreted step 10. You know, made direct amends, continued prayer, and made amends when necessary, whatever the words are. So when I heard Blaine say this, and I began to study the big book on step 10, which was not in the original six steps, but it is something that the Oxford groups did all the time. I mean, they took inventory. Every time they met, they would take inventories of each other's. They would constantly, you know, they would keep asking for God's help, and it was a continuous kind of inventory. So that's one of the reasons Bill would have put that in, is to say, well, I mean, that's what we've been doing, so we might as well put that in, and because this has to be read by someone for whom there is no sponsor or anyone from AA around. So let's just read this on page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And even that is different from the way it's written in the steps on the wall, isn't it? You know, when you think about it, where is it? Continue to take personal inventory. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And here's the action, set right any mistakes we've made, which is a much more positive thing. Instead of admitting it, we're setting right mistakes. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We cleaned up the past through steps 4 through 9. That's how we clean them up. We identify where we had harmed people, and then as we went through the process, we made amends at step 9. And then they say, we have entered the world of the spirit. So by this time, step 9, we are in the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's so close to what we did in step 4 that I venture to suggest it is step 4. Self-seeking sort of is no longer in there. Resentments are put in place of that. But it is the character defects, at least the major character defects that we've identified. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them, 6 and 7. We discuss them with someone immediately. 5, and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. So that is pretty clear to me that they're saying you did this in the past, continue to do that, and what you should be doing is steps 4 through 9, or the equivalent of what you did in steps 4 through 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So once Blaine sort of opened my eyes, I began to think of this more clearly. I will answer another question, which is, it sounds like we do this at night too for the evening meditation, and I will talk about my sense of the distinction between the two when we get to step 11. For those of you who know the big book, I mean, I know there are people here who just joined and wouldn't even know what the heck I'm talking about, but there is an evening meditation that uses similar kinds of words, and the distinction between the two is one that I think is important, but other people, other big book thumpers do not. Excuse me. So what I did and started to do and what I continue to do is I don't use the forms anymore, but I take out pieces of paper and I put columns on them and I write out all my resentments, and then I write down in the second column why I have those resentments, and then in the third column I write out whether they affect my self-esteem, or whether each thing in the second column affects my self-esteem, my ambitions, my security, my personal relations, my sexual relations, or whether fear is involved. And then if there's anyone on the list, and there often are people who have harmed me or others, I think of them as sick people, ask God to remove, to give me the same tolerance, pity, and patience I cheerfully grant a sick friend, or I sometimes have had to say the page 552, prayers of praying for them to have what I want out of life. And then I'm able to go on and figure out where I'm selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And then I deal with the fears, you know, in the fear form, or on the fear sheets of paper. Exactly what I did in steps 4 through 9. And then I deal with any sex conduct issues. As I get older, there are fewer of them. I have a friend, it's a psychologist, a little younger than I am, but he and I are very close friends. And I said to him, I think my testosterone level is getting lower. And he said, you know, if I review my life, I don't think testosterone has done me any good whatsoever. Anyway. Where was I? a whole range of thoughts in my mind now. What I've done, and one thing I recognize, I'm a professional, I'm not an amateur anymore. Since I've reached the world of the spirit, I can now use the step 10 approach, steps 4 through 9, in a more complex, interesting way. So any relationship issues I have, whether there's a sex aspect, a real attraction or not, can go into the same kind of form that we have used in step four for sex conduct. So any relationship I have could be, I could have that third form, which was used for sex conduct in step 4. I could use that for relationships. So whom have I harmed? Where was I selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? Did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where did I go wrong? What should I have done instead? So I can use that form for that. I've used, because principles is so broad, this whole thing of something that's weighing on my mind, I've used principles such as, should I change jobs or not? Or should I buy this or not? Or any major decision I've had to make in my life has gone on to, as a principle, in the resentment part of my step 10. And I have never found, I've never found it to fail me that I've made a decision that ultimately is as close as possible, unselfish, honest, considerate, and have no fear involved in it. So that my character defects are not involved in making that decision. Doesn't mean I'm always going to make the exact right decision, but it is at that moment the right decision. And so I use it to make decisions. I've changed jobs. I changed jobs, left the whole law practice behind me. It took me 2 or 3 years of step 10s to reach that decision. And I also chose to do my step 5s with different people who might assist me in certain areas. When I was, my friend was a psychologist, was a career counselor for many years, and I did my step 5 with him on whether I should actually quit the job and take on another thing with him, so he could hear my step 5 and give me any feedback. I also did the same step 5 with my wife on that same issue, because she had retired by this time, and any choices I made would affect our financial situation and our you know, our personal relationships. So you know, I, at that point, being a professional, I can do things that you wouldn't do at home, you know. And I once, years and years ago, was having really, my wife and I were having real difficulties in communicating, and I put her on the left-hand column as a resentment, and then I had like 20 things in the second column as to why she was on that list, and I actually took those 20 things and I put them into column 1. So that I had a list of 20 resentments as principles. I am resentful at my wife because, as in the one, and then, why are those things bothering me? So I was able to, the current, well, current it is, but people talk about drill down deeper. Mm-hmm. I'd never recommend that as a step 4 through 9. That would be ridiculous. You would never finish. But as you work through this program and you have already reached the world of the spirit, entered into the spirit of the world of the spirit, I mean, spirit of the world of the spirit, who cares about stuff. Once you've entered into that, you're in a different place, and your step 10s are shorter. You know, I find sometimes I just write down my resentments, and I write down why they're on there, and I say, okay, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened, they're killing me, you know, and then I just speak about it to someone, and suddenly I'm in a different space. I would say that every single sponsee I've had who has relapsed because they did not pay attention to step 10. And I've put together, there's a list of 12, why not, ways you can figure out whether you need to do step 10. They're pretty simple to remember, because they come from the big book. One of them comes from the doctor's, three of them come from the doctor's opinion, and I did emphasize them when I read them. They're found on page, XXVIII in the 4th edition and XXVI in the 3rd edition, so 28 and 26. And it's the last two lines on that page. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. And so if I'm restless, irritable, and discontented, these are general feelings I have. If I'm restless, irritable, and discontented, it's time for me to do a step 10. Page number again?
Yes.
XXVIII, 28 Roman numerals, in the 4th edition, and XXVI, 26 in the 3rd and 2nd editions. Right at the bottom. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort on the next page, which comes at once from taking taking a few drinks. So that's 3. And frankly, I wish I paid attention to that more than I do. I generally have to go get worse before I recognize that I'm really restless, irritable, and discontented and not just grumpy. And then there's page 52 in the chapter We Agnostics with the what are called the 8 bedevilments. And I read through those as well.
Where's that?
Page 52. In the paragraph that begins, we have to ask ourselves right in the middle why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. Then there's a list of bedevilments. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flights? So these are the 8 bedevilments. And so that's 11, right? And the 12th one actually comes from what you have called the 10th step promises. Is food becoming a problem? Like, that's the last resort. You know, I mean, if that, I mean, these are almost in order of severity. And if food becomes a problem, my God, I should have done it much earlier. You know. But sometimes that's what happens. So the 10-step promises, which are on page, what, 84? Let's say? 83. No, 84. Bottom of 84, top of 85. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone. Carol, I just read. Well, I've forgotten who read it. Carol?
Cynthia.
Cynthia. Sorry, Cynthia. What Cynthia read this morning. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone that by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. So if my food becomes more of a problem. Now, for instance, I told you that I deal with my volume issues currently by sort of judging how full I am. I think as I get older, this is not going to work. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to do some form of judging the weight or the volume that I take in. Maybe not, and I'm experimenting a bit, but I think that's what's going to happen as I get older. But if I weigh myself once a month, and if I start to gain weight, then I have to look at what's going on in my life, and I find that doing a step 10 often is what does it for me, is that I'm really, my emotions are sort of taking over, and I'm not aware of it, and I'm just not as aware of my body and how full I am. So those are the 12 sort of indications, and I should do them when I'm restless, irritable, and discontented, but I don't always do that. I don't recognize that. So am I prey to misery and depression? Am I feeling useless? Am I not a, I've forgotten all the bedevilments, but these are the things that I'm looking at. And if I'm feeling that way, get out those pieces of paper, fill out this, fill out those, answer the questions, do a step 4, search out someone to do a step 5 with, ask God to remove your defects of character. You're going to whiz through 6 and 7. And make your list of amends and make your amends. Now, for me, my amends have become living amends only. There's not, you know, I'm pretty good. If I do something that's bad or that I think is bad, I immediately apologize, make amends for anything that I've done that I think is bad. Really, the things that are going through me right now are trying to adapt to the circumstances of the world and life. And they creep up on you. You don't really realize them. Like that fact, a noisy factory where you don't even know how noisy it is. Things that go on in the world can bother us. And they are bothering me much more than things going on in my own life. But of course they come out in my own life. They don't come out in any other way. Really quick.
What was the 12th one?
The 12th one was, is food becoming a problem in any way, shape, or form?
Is it in the book? Or
well, it's not, the what I read from page 84, these 10th set promises are, food is no longer a problem. Right? I mean, that's the essence. I can be around it, it doesn't bother me, but if I begin to be tempted, if my weight begins to go up, if I'm just eating, finding myself eating more or something like that, I don't break my abstinence because I don't eat between meals and I'm very careful. There are foods I don't eat, but because my volume issue is variable. If I find any issues relating to that or just that I'm fixating, I may be fixating on a particular food, even if it's one that I can eat, but I'm fixating on it, something is probably going on in my life.
So it's in the hidden promises.
It's the equivalent of the hidden promises.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, there is one other one. I have a 13th, which is if my wife, my kids, or my sponsees tell me I should do a step 10, then I do it too. Because they're not wrong. And that has happened to me. I mean, I start off by saying I'm no guru, and I am not. I am really, you know, one bite away, and I am, if I didn't do things like this or carry the message, I would be back. I practice a good enough program. I'm no saint. So, okay, so step 10 for me has saved myself from, I've saved myself from relapse doing step 10s. Abstinence I take for granted. That's not a big deal. And I'm so careful with foods. I know what foods I add foods on a lot in terms of, well, I'm beginning to really like these foods. There's something wrong. I stop them. I mean, that's not been a problem. It's dealing with life as it goes on. Because between the last time you do a step 9 and today, or the last time I do a step 10 and today, which includes step 9, there is a past, and that past is something I react to. I do step 10s as often as I need to, and that sometimes means once a week and sometimes means once a year, depending on what's going on in my life and in the life around me. It's something that's really important to me, and I can only recommend it to you and tell you that once you reach this world of the spirit, you can use it in flexible ways. Okay. The step five's part of the step 10. Sometimes I have actually waited, gone to an OA meeting and waited to speak to the last recovered person there and said, can you give me 5 minutes? Because it's only 5 minutes. I mean, I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened in all of these ways. You know, my fear is that God would have me be, you know, this. I mean, I know how to do this. It's just that I have to share it. And I don't get this delighted look the world in the eye stuff that I talked about after step five, because I get that actually when I write the second column of step four. You know, this is what's bothering me. And suddenly, okay. You know, so it's really become a second nature to me now. And but it has saved my life. So I recommend step 10 to you. And now we're on to step 11. And there are sheets here. Could someone hand them out? Thanks. Thanks, man. These were drawn up by Blaine. And every prayer you need to make, evening, morning, and night, and during the day, is right there. And I want to, instead of sort of going through them in detail, well, actually, my...
Does Blaine have the box?
Blaine is alive, but he's quite ill. But Blaine, there's one talk available of Blaine's. He and another man named John, who still does big book studies, but Blaine and John did one that is available in a very difficult to find way. You can email me through the website, or I can just tell you, but don't try to take notes. There's a wonderful tape library known as Gopher State Tape Library out of Minnesota. And they for years they were the best. Now there's a whole bunch of other wonderful websites available. But they have a tape, they have a series of big book study done by Blaine quite some years ago, but you can't find it using the search mechanism on the website. You have to download their catalog, which is a PDF, and then search for Blaine and skip Blaine Washington, which is another, which is the first occurrence of the word Blaine in there, and you'll find Blaine's big book study. And it is great. I mean, he's academic. His stories, he's not as entertaining as Joe and Charlie are, but I'll tell you, it's well worth listening to him. His analysis really added to my appreciation of the big book. And he's the one who came up with the step four forms and the step 11 thing that you're just getting. So I just want to read the... I just want to sort of give you the overview, I do have time, so I will. Oh, I actually have lots of time. I'll go through this in a little bit more detail because it is important. So, people say, "Well, why are these not the step 10 promises? Why do I assert that they come after step 9 rather than step 10?" It's because everything from the promises, they will always materialize if we work for the middle of page 84, is in the world of the spirit. And we've been promised and told and guaranteed that we have already, in the step 10 paragraph, we have entered the world of the spirit. So we're at that point where everything of all is true. And the second we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, is at the same time as step 10. We immediately go into step 10 mode, no longer step 4 through 9, but we're in step 10 mode. And we've also ceased fighting anything or anyone. So these are the promises after we have finished step 9. That's how I read it at any rate. We have finished step 9 and we're doing step 10s whenever we need to. So that's my answer. It's take it or leave it. It doesn't matter whether you call them step 10 promises or step 9 promises, because the step 9 promises that we often read, we will be amazed before we're halfway through, you're going to know a new freedom and new happiness, those are halfway through step 9. So I say what happens after step 9 is we're now in the world of the spirit, We have to go on to step 10 and continue to do step 10s, and we're free of the food, and we're living a life that we wanted when we came into this program. So the big book goes on, page 85, with all these step 10 promises, if you want to call them that. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And then the middle paragraph on page 85, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. And one of my mentors in this program will often, he will introduce himself. He wants to use the word recovered because that's what the big book says. We have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And recovered gives hope to the newcomer in a way that recovering does not, I think. Recovered means I know where I am. I stand in relationship with my higher power, and I have that power in me, and I am sane, and I no longer want this stuff. But I'm not cured. So he often will introduce himself, I'm so-and-so, I'm recovered, not cured. So if you're a little embarrassed to use the word recovered, but you have recovered, recovered, not cured, might take away that little sting. Then they say what we really have is a daily reprieve, and a reprieve is a suspension of a death sentence. So we have a daily reprieve, contingent, conditional, on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So we have to maintain our spiritual condition in order to keep the solution that we have found. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. And it's been pointed out, we now have our will back. Why? Because our will is the will of our higher power. So we can exercise our will. And the big book is going to start talking about intuition as opposed to analysis. Because we have our will back, and we have our will back only because we are living in the sunlight of the Spirit, and the direct connection between our deepest values, our God, our higher power, whatever you want to call it, and our minds, because that connection is flowing, we can rely on our will because we're no longer acting on self-will. We're relying on the will to do what our higher power, our deepest values, our deity would have us be. To do and to be what our deepest values would have us. And so we have our will back, and as a matter of fact, we must have our will back. We must willingly and with determination and planning do the best that we can according to what we believe in. They go on, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we've become God-conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action. Now, this sixth sense, is described more fully in a couple of pages. I think it's what Bill calls the fourth dimension in earlier parts of the big book. It is this sense of being able intuitively to know what the next act is, or the next thought should be, or the next statement or words should be. It is this relying, being able to rely on the direct connection, that the flow is still there. It is an amazing experience for someone who has absolutely no belief in a higher power that can do anything, to know that it can even work for me. And it does work for me. And I'll talk about that. They go on. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. Now, meditation in 1939, believe me, did not mean what meditation means now. I mean it, you know, things like yoga and Buddhism and stuff in the United States were around, but this is not what Bill was talking about, nor had Bill studied them at this time. Prayer meant asking, meditation meant listening. And meditation, in the big book sense, is a very practical and very short series of prayers and thoughts and thinking about specific how to handle your day-to-day life. I do not call out all other kinds of meditations. Some of my mentors in this program meditate much longer, and they are certainly more spiritual than I am. I have not yet been able to achieve a level of mindfulness or level, you know, I have tried many different times, but I have trouble being alone with myself. I really do. And that's not the kind of meditation that the Big Book suggests is necessary. So this is, from my point of view, this is the minimum that should be done from the Big Book perspective, but you can do so much more if you are so inclined to do. And so many people get so much out of meditation in the current use of the word, mindfulness, yoga, you know, Zen, whatever kind it is, they get so much out of it, this sense of serenity. I admire them. If I were allowed to be envious, I would envy them. I don't in any way, shape, or form suggest that you not do this. But in addition to that, I suggest you do what the Big Book sets out. So the step 11 suggests prayer meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. I'm just looking at the Ask It basket. Okay. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. So when the Big Book makes definite and valuable suggestions, I think it's worth listening to. The Big Book divides prayer meditation into three periods. At night, just before we go to sleep, if you work night shifts, in the morning, just before you go to sleep, but just before you go to sleep, excuse me, in the morning or when you wake up, and then during the day. And the first thing they have is at night. And you may ask, why do we start with the night? There's nothing magical about it. The original draft said, when you first wake up in the morning, do this. And someone must have said to Bill, why don't you make that at night? Why would you review the day that has just passed in the morning? Why don't you review it before you go to sleep? And Bill must have said, well, that's a good idea. And so he just changed the beginning of that paragraph. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Sounds like step 4 again. Do we owe an apology? Sounds like step 9. Have we kept something to ourselves that should be discussed with another person at once? Sounds like step 5. Were we kind and loving to her at all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and require what corrective measures should be taken. I would say that sounds like a 6 and 7. So it sounds like the same as step 10, but and there are many people, including Blaine, who interpret it that way. And they write out their step 4 resentments, and they share with their step 5 with their sponsor every night, and they ask God to remove their shortcomings 6 and 7 that night, and then they figure out what amends they have to make, and they make them the next day, 8 and 9. I see a distinction. And I'll tell you what that distinction is, but I have no more authority than Blaine does on this, and Blaine is such an important mentor to me. For me, there's a distinction between reviewing the day and reviewing my life. That's how I see it. And my best example is very personal to me. My mother, in the last 4 years of her life, suffered a stroke and was really very unhappy and very helpless in many, many ways. Every day I would phone her and my father or visit them. I mean, I'd have contact with them every day and often personally see them. And I would review at night whether I gave them all that they needed, whether I was of service to them, whether I was doing what I could for them. And that's what I would do every night. But once a week, I would take out a piece of paper, I write down my father, my mother, their relationship, plus all the other things that were going on in my life. And I'd start to delve deeply into my feelings about my father, my feelings about my mother, my feelings about their relationship, which is not something I would have done if I just reviewed the day. And, you know, I would write down things like, I'm worried, under my father, I'm worried that he will die before my mother does, that he will get so tired of lifting her and taking care of her that his body will give out. I don't want to change her diaper. I mean, I would put things like that out. I don't want to be further burdened. I mean, I would put down things like that, which would never occur to me every day, but I would be putting things like that down. Their relationship, she was always sort of taking care of him so he could do the important things. I think that she was doing important things too, but that's how she thought of it. He was a politician, he was doing significant things in the world, so she was the one who took care of him and made it possible for him to do those things. And now he was taking care of her in the way that she had taken care of him. Was he resenting doing these mundane things? Was their love for each other, which is a very deep love, losing its joy, things of that sort? That would go on to my step 10. I would never have thought of that every day, because every day I was just reviewing the day and what was my contribution to the day. So for me, doing a step 10 every week made a big difference in dealing with all the things, with my life that was weighing on me, as opposed to the day that I acted. And that's how I see the difference. I could be wrong. Okay? And certainly many people who are big book thumpers suggest that this step 11 evening meditation is in fact the same as step 10. And maybe if they do it every day, they will catch all the things that I would not have caught. I don't know. I find it impracticable for me. For me, the step 11 meditation is done in bed at night, my eyes closed, I'm thinking. I don't write anything down, and usually I don't have anyone to talk about what I have to talk about. You know, they say, do we owe an apology? Usually I don't. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? No. You know, so these are questions, whereas step 10 is definite statements about what you should be doing, but step 11, evening meditation, is a series of questions. Should I be doing this? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? I see the distinction. Other people do not. But at any rate, at the minimum, you should, every night in your bed, even without writing it down, at the minimum, you should be reviewing your day. And I don't want to tell you that I do that every day. I have taken now to doing it every day because I think my spiritual condition is in trouble. I'm frankly not worried about it, but I know what I have to do to deal with it. But at the moment, I am in fit, but not as fit as I need to be, spiritual condition. and that's all I can say. I mean, I'm working on that and I'm doing my best. So.
Do you find that you had the same thing over and over? Or
A very good question. When I do my step 10, and I'm going to generalize a bit more, did I find that often it's the same thing? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes, absolutely, but it's not exactly the same thing. It's a recurrence of the things that caused it earlier. I've had experiences for a long time of having to deal with annoying people. Okay? I guess we all do, but having to deal with them, whether at the workplace or at home or among friends, there may be one person who just does things that are annoying, and they're frustrating and annoying, and it's always of the nature of, I knew he was going to say that, or I knew she was going to say that. You know what I mean, right? And then you do the step 10, and you say, oh, well, if I know that she's going to say that, why does it upset me every time she does, you know? Okay. And then 6 days pass or 20 days pass, I knew she was going to say that. So it's new every time. Like, I you know, and our defects of character are there. They're waiting for us to get out of fit spiritual condition. So, you know, any annoyance is going to, you know, it's something we have to deal with. And sometimes we can deal with it serenely, and we've reached that zone where, and I must tell you that very often the step 10 I've done on these annoying people have given me a zone with them for months. But then other things happen in my life. And then the annoyance continue. it comes back because it's just a sort of a symptom of the other things that are going on. So I have to deal with all of that plus them. You know. So I appreciate the question. But I want to suggest it is not that you're regressing or it's not that you're rehashing old things, although you may find that some things come to the surface that you hadn't dealt with. You may be fine-tuning some of the past that you didn't deal with in your step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. But that's all part of the package, that you're just dealing with things that are on your mind and working them through in the step 10. Step 11, though, at the very least, is every night. You think about it. You look at your day. But the purpose of step 11 evening meditation is clearly to fit yourself to be better the next day. That's how it reads. It's clearly that. I review my day to see how well I did. I make sure I didn't do anything so bad that I need to apologize and share it with another person. But however I did, I want to make sure that I can do a better job tomorrow. I mean, that's clearly what the evening meditation is all about. And I've been doing it much more, if you'll pardon the expression, religiously in the last number of months than I did before. It was more subconscious with me, and I'm making it more conscious. I think it's important for me to do that. So that's the evening meditation, and you'll see Blaine's sheet that has those questions on it. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. There's the prayer. God, please direct my thinking. I especially ask that my thinking be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. Now, this would happen to me often when I was practicing as a lawyer. I had a litigation style of law, so I was often preparing cross-examinations and, you know, arguments and things of that sort. And before I adopted this sort of these suggestions, the night before a major cross-examination was often a sleepless night. What's the right first question? If he says this or she says that, what's my next question, or how are they going to get around? I mean, it was just all this mind games that had to be played in preparation for a cross-examination, for an argument, or even for a what we call in Canada direct examination, or whole strategy. And when I started working these steps in earnest about 25 years ago, and I saw these words, we ask God for if we face indecision, we may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or a decision. God, I ask you for an inspiration, intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. They say right at the beginning, you may not. You're just inexperienced. But gradually, it's not probable we're going to be inspired on the next page at all times. We might pay for this presumption, all sorts of absurd actions. Here's a promise. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. Such important words for me, and so true for me. You know, I ended up saying to myself, I've prepared myself, I know the case, I'm going to sleep tonight, and in the morning I'm going to ask for inspiration for the right thought or action when it comes to cross-examination. And what I discovered, well, first of all, I'd slept a lot better, so I was in much better physical shape. And secondly, that because I could rely on my intuition on the, and they give you prayers to say in the morning, which I'll get to in a moment, I knew the right questions to ask. I found out that there wasn't just one right first cross-examination question, there are 30. And whatever one I asked, I could flow with it, I could go back and forth. And this is true in my relationships and in the way I worked. It just sort of, if I began to rely on inspiration, it began to work for me. It was an amazing experience. They go on, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that. It doesn't work. I have asked, and I think I did ask today, that I be a proper conduit of the Big Book's message of recovery. Not that I be a star, but that I be a proper messenger of that message. That's appropriate. For the cases I had, I didn't ask that my client win or that I win. I asked that justice be done, because that's my highest ideal. And secure in the knowledge that whatever I was doing was directed to that, the outcome was less significant because I did what I could. Very often justice wasn't done, but that's not my problem. I did my best. They say if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. I'm sad to say that in the regular Jewish liturgy, I have not yet been able to find a poem that I like, a prayer that I like. And I wish I could, but it just doesn't. There are modern Jewish poems, prayers that are, but not the traditional ones, which I would love to have said. There's one that's pretty good, but it's got an aspect to it that I don't like, and there is an alternative version of it, but it doesn't have any historical nature. Anyway, it's not important. But you know, various prayers. You know, certainly the step 3 prayer, the step 7 prayer. I very much like the St. Francis prayer that's found in the AA 12 and 12 step 11. Although I don't think the translation that Bill uses is as good as others. Instrument of peace is better to me than channel of peace, but other people like channel. You know the one I'm talking about. Grant me, it's called the St. Francis prayer. What is it? I can't remember.
Where there is hatred, let me sow love.
Yeah, where there's despair, let me bring hope. Where there is, grant me that I understand rather than be understood. That kind of stuff. Now, the last line isn't to my liking, but what the heck.
What's the last line?
Line is phrased by dying that we achieve eternal life.
Yeah. Someone said, I heard this somewhere, that by dying to self, that we achieve spiritual life.
By dying...
To self,
you achieve a spiritual life. Okay. It's not what he said. It's not the Latin anyway. I think the Latin is pretty clear, but. Anyway, so they talk about that. So that's the day, and you can see that it's also one that you could do in bed in the morning, and that you just think about the day ahead. You say these very set prayers that direct your attention to a higher power rather than yourself. And you plan the day, and if you have any problems, you take your day for granted. You just say, I ask for intuition, a thought, or a decision, and then you let go. You let go. And this feeling of being able to let go is an incredibly empowering feeling, which I never thought I could have. So I was asked a number of different questions about praying, because a lot of people cannot understand how an atheist can pray. So I wanted to ask about that. I answered one question already. Oh, I should say, by the way, that in terms of step 10, it's fascinating to me that a lot of Big Book thumpers say you got to do it the way the Big Book says, because if you want what they have, you got to do what they did. And I mean, I grew up in that atmosphere of Big Book enthusiasts. And as a matter of fact, when I was in Seattle in 2004, there's a recording of what I did in 2004. I think you'll find me much more, much less flexible in my approach to the steps than I am now. But what is fascinating to me is that, first of all, as I study AA history, it's obvious to me that the Big Book does not reflect what anyone did in the history of AA. It reflects what they thought would be the best to convey to those who had no one around them. I mean, Dr. Bob certainly didn't work the steps with people the way it's suggested here, because of his charismatic nature. He would do the steps in sort of one day. Not that he thought he was charismatic. That was one of the reasons he was charismatic, was that he didn't think he was charismatic. But Bill certainly did it differently, and all kinds of other people did it differently. They had more time, they had more energy. They wrote down what they thought would work as a practical measure. Second of all, big book thumpers disagree on interpreting the directions in the big book. You know, just at the Vision for You conference, the face-to-face convention that was held last September, Harlan and Ruth and I did the steps. And every so often, I mean, Ruth would, I don't know if any of you know Ruth, Ruth's just wonderful. And Harlan was here, last year, and he's just such an inspiration. They're just wonderful people. They know the big book cold. They're more Joe and Charlie than I am because they haven't heard Blaine, but they're just terrific. No, I mean that. I mean that. But they're really quite Joe and Charlie people. But their step four forms that they suggest are more Joe and Charlie than big book. And Joe and Charlie admit that they add in stuff from the 12 and 12. And when you, and I would talk, I've talked about step four each time, and Ruth would sit in front. Harlan was usually off to the side, but Ruth was in front. Every so often, I could see Ruth just wince when I was talking nicely, kindly, lovingly. And I'm sure if she saw me, there were times when and so we even disagreed on things like step four and things like step three. And then, I mean, when we got to step 10, Ruth talked about step 10 as doing it every night, just as the big book says. Harlan, who was supposed to talk about step 11, said, well, I do step 10 three times a day, because if you read the AA 12 and 12, Bill suggests these spot check inventories during the day. And then I got up, I was doing step 12, and I was saying, and I do them whenever I need to, sometimes once a week and sometimes once a year. And I said, and because it was quite apropos at that point for me to say, who are we to say that there's only one way of doing the steps the big book way? You know, if we disagree on these, they're minor, but if we disagree on these, who are we to say you gotta do it the big book way, because we each differ on some of the big book ways. And so that's one reason why I say, and I'll be speaking more, later on this morning, about the flexibility in our approach, that we have to be open to what works with people. It's practical. You know, and if what I'm doing doesn't work with someone, and I'm the only person around to help that person, then I'm not going to continue to do what I'm doing. I'm going to try and find a way to get to that person. You know, I've had some training as a teacher of adults, but I know that teachers, people who've had training in, for younger people, get all this training in different learning styles and how you have to get, you know, approach the same issue in many different ways depending on how people learn and listen and stuff. Why shouldn't we be applying that kind of flexibility, especially with the luxury of one-on-one? I mean, teachers, my goodness, they have 20, 30, 40 kids in a classroom, and they have to find ways of conveying knowledge to all kinds of different learners. But we have one-on-one. Why shouldn't we be listening carefully, helping the person listen his or her own way and learn his or her own way? Anyway, I'll get to that. So that's the daily meditation. Again, it's very practical. What am I going to do today? How am I going to handle it? And if I'm faced with a problem, I let it go. I pray for inspiration, I let it go. And I never ask for myself to do anything, but if I'm going to be helping someone, I ask that I be helped. I was asked what techniques do you use to help your life at the moment. I'm just coming to them. Okay, now I've got that. What is spiritual fitness? Now I'm get to that.
There's more in the basket.
I know there's more in the basket. I'm going to be breaking slightly early between 11 and 12, not at step 11 and step 12, so that my step 12 can end. I don't have to break up the step 12. But I've almost finished step 11, and I'll deal with it. And then come the moment-to-moment prayers. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought of action. Right thought or action. God, please give me the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. God, I'm no longer running the show. I'm no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done, thy will be done. Or sometimes you can say, thy will not mine be done. And that happened when I was in practicing law. I was up against one particular lawyer who was really good and really annoying. And I mean, he was a really good lawyer. And every so often, I would take a break and I would go somewhere quiet, and I'd say, "Thy will not mine be done. I'm no longer in the shrine. I'm no longer in the shrine. I'm no longer. Thy will not mine be done. Thy will not mine be done." And you know what? I mean, people used to sell mantras. That's a mantra. That's all it is. It's just a sort of repetition over and over again until thy will not mine be done become, oh, thy will not mine be done. I'm no longer running the show. I'm no longer running the show. And suddenly, there's peace. And just repeating these over and over again really does give you a sense of serenity. And the promises, we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we just outlined. So here's this whole notion of the energy of the spirit, whatever we deeply believe in, is flowing through us because the pipeline is open. We can have some sense of faith that as it flows within us, what we used to have to analyze is now going to come to us. Just come to us. We'll just understand it. And life will be easier for us to react to. We will be reacting to life easier because the flow of whatever we deeply believe in is relatively unblocked and coming into our thinking and our actions. And this ability, this confidence that we have in this increases as time goes on and we see how it works. So it's a self-fulfilling promise that keeps getting better and better, because as we are calmer, as we allow life to go on as it is, as we are no longer in charge of life, our reaction time becomes more intuitive. I don't want you to think that I am perfect at this. I can tell you that I am, my wife says that I have Asperger's light. I sometimes can't read social cues and I sometimes can't figure things out easily. I once did a favor for some friends of mine that was so easy to do for me, but for them was a really big deal. And they sent me this huge bouquet of flowers. I mean, absolutely stunning. It must have, I'm sure it cost them a lot of money, to the office. And I sat there for 15 minutes there with a thank you note. They're thanking me. Where does it end? Do I phone them and thank them for thanking me? You know, this sort of this stupid analysis. I finally phoned them and thanked them. And I told my wife about this later. My wife says, well, of course you thank people who send you flowers. You know, I mean, so she's much more in tune with reality than I am. So I'm not perfect at this, but it certainly has helped me in most of my life. And it certainly has taken away a lot of the analysis that I do. Because I've got this mind that just keeps going on and on. I can't stop it. I don't know how to do it. It's always filming me. You know, I'm always sort of, at times, I'm flitting in and out between watching a movie of myself doing things. And this brings me down to a reality that I can rely on. And I really appreciate that it's done it. I just want to finish some Ask a Basket questions here. And you know what? I'll pick this up because there may be some right on point. And then I want to take a break, and then we can come back and I can finish with step 12. I was asked, what techniques do you use to help you live in the moment? I think I've just given them. Those are the techniques I use. I'm no longer running the show. I'm no longer running the show. Likewise, techniques for calling on a higher power in the moment. Exactly these techniques. I use these techniques. I use nothing else because I have no other techniques. Tell us about how you pray and to what. I did have a discussion with the person who asked this, but I think it's important for people who are religious and who have grown up in a praying milieu. How do I pray to something I don't know, that I don't believe in? Well, first of all, I do believe in my deepest values. I've made that clear. Second of all, because I've been part of this program for so long, I don't worry about translation. So I say the prayers as they're written. They don't bother me. They used to bother me, but they don't bother me now. But when they used to bother me, I would translate. Instead of saying God, I would say my deepest values. Instead of saying you, I would say deepest values. So my deepest values, I want to concentrate on my deepest values. So, I mean, I can tell you a step three prayer as an example. So the step three prayer is, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. So my deepest values I'm offering myself to you, my deepest values, to build with me and to do with me according to my deepest values. Okay? It's not quite as flowing, but that's the way I do it. And again, remember that I right at the beginning I said, I see my higher power as the true north or the true magnetic north on the compass. You know, I want to focus on the true deepest values and not Lori's way, the other 359 degrees, on the compass. So I'm being pulled. I want to be pulled in the direction of what I most deeply believe in. And that's how I concentrate on it. So that's how I pray to a higher power. For me, the moment of prayer is, of course, not a time when I'm asking for some supernatural deity to fix things for me. It is a time when I'm asking to focus not on my own will, but on my deepest values. And it's a time of meditation and prayer in the sense of asking myself, in a sense, to focus on deepest values. I'm not praying for anything to be done for me. I'm praying that I focus on what I most deeply believe in and not my petty annoyances or my wish to be in charge of life. And so that's what I do. And I don't feel the need to translate anymore because I just don't. I use the word God and it doesn't bother me to use the word God, even though I will never use it in regular conversation out of the rooms of OA. Because it clearly doesn't mean in the regular rooms, in anywhere else. The idea of doing all these 10 steps throughout the day sounds so time consuming. If I put my program first, how can I possibly keep up with all that writing? Well, that's my point. That's why I don't do step 10 at night, as a step 11. I couldn't do it. Blaine does, or did. I don't know what he's doing now, but he certainly did, and other people I know do. I don't. I must say that my step 10s are really short. I focus on the things that are bothering me, and sometimes, just recently I did a step 10, I had a list of about, I don't know, 5, 10 public figures. And then when I got to what bothered me about them, they're all the same. You know, so my second column was I listed the 10. Yeah, these are bothering me. Yeah, they're... And then I listed what bothered me about them for the first one. They were the same for all of them. And then, obviously, they were affecting all parts of my life. And they were all sick people. I had to treat them with tolerance, sympathy, and patience, although not forgive them for what they were doing, because what they were doing was wrong. And then where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and vengeful? Selfish. I wanted them to be different from who they were. Dishonest. I can't stop them from being who they are. And I'm not in charge of them. And I'm trying to deny reality. There's nothing I can do in relation to them. Or sometimes my dishonesty is I'm not doing enough in relation to what I could be doing. You know, self-seeking, somehow if I were in charge of the world, it would be better, and it would be. And fearful, I'm afraid of whatever, I don't want to talk politics here, but I'm afraid of whatever it was that they inspired fear in me. Then I go to the fear and I say, okay, well, what would God have me be in relation to this fear? A person who accepts the reality of the situation and does what he can to change it. What more can I do? You know, if I'm afraid of the future for my grandchildren, a person who is not paralyzed by fear and is not so morbid and depressed, so he can transmit to his grandchildren whatever joy in life and whatever resilience and love and activism that they can bring to their lives, because that's all I can do. And so my step 10s are often repetitive. They don't relate much to what's going on in my own life, because my own life is, I'm retired. It's not bad. And I've worked hard and it's not bad now. But it's always a matter of what can I bring to it? And that's what step 10 allows me to. So I think I've dealt with that. It tells about how you pray. I've done that. What is spiritual fitness? What is sobriety with food? Are they the same thing? My answer is, if you are spiritually fit, you are sober. The measure, I mean, the big book in the appendix to Spiritual Experience defines a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience as a personality change sufficient to overcome alcoholism, in our case, overcome compulsive eating. And therefore, the definition is reversed. If these step 10 promises are true, if you feel neutral about food, if your personality changes such that you no longer want to go back, you're spiritually fit. If you're tempted and you don't recoil as from a hot flame, but it's sort of like it's eating at literally away at you, you're not spiritually fit, and you should go and do something about your spiritual fitness. Okay, that's that. Can I wait to do step 10 until after I've done with step 9? Well, yes, no. I mean, yes, you finish step 9. If the promises come true for you, which is another indication that you've done step 9, that you've done steps 4 through 9, then you're in the world of the Spirit. Continue to do step 10 as often as you need to. You might need to do it 5 days after you finish your step 9. There might be something that happens in the world or happens in your life that suddenly affects you tremendously, and you might have to do a step 10 on that issue. But it will be a step 10, not a step 9. Step 4 through 9 will be a step 10. List of character defects, list made by my sponsor who takes my fifth step, correct? Not as I read the big book. As I read the big book, the list of character defects are 4. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And there are no more, but boy, are they broad and are they big. And they're all aspects of self, wanting to be in charge of self. And that's your list of character defects. There are so many other lists of character defects that I don't want to confuse you one way or the other. You might have, I've seen a whole bunch of big book studies, and actually the Back to Basics book has, the AA book has a list of character defects that are many more than 4. But the big book has only 4. And you can see how, if you study the step 4, you can see how those 4, identified in the resentment list are carried forward into the fear and sex conduct list. There's a consistency there that shows that there are 4 character defects, but boy, are they big. Okay? I think a lot of lists of character defects, at least from my perspective, are lists of character, are defective actions taken as a result of character defects. You know, jealousy, gossip, gluttony, these are all aspects of selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. That's the big book approach. You know what? You know, we have this 12-step workbook and study guide, which I think is available back there. Right, Paul? It's the, which one is it?
The green one.
Yeah, not the 12-step workbook, the green one that Paul has. That has a lot of big book in it, but it's also has other OA approaches to it. Yeah, Paul's holding it up. That has helped a lot of people. A lot of people are working with that, and their list of character defects are much greater, much longer than the list of character defects in the big book. Whatever works.
That book has your forms in it,
doesn't it? No, it doesn't have my forms in it. It has forms similar, and they're not my forms, but Blaine's forms. They're similar, but not the same. And, you know, if only they were the same, you know, but they're not the same. So, okay, so that's... some people just can't read the big book. And why do we torture them with forcing them to read the big book? You know, you can still do the steps the big book way without forcing them to read the big book, too. Okay. Can you comment on this? The step 10 inventory is continually make amends and be of maximum usefulness. The step 11 inventory is to ensure that the pipe to higher power is not clogged. The process is almost identical, but the purpose is different. Okay. Can I comment on this?
No comments.
I think that's helpful. But again, the step 10, the step 11 inventory is a daily one. It's one that focuses on the day. And I guess that ensure the pipe is not clogged. I'll accept that. That's good. Thank you. Could you give more examples of 9th step amends? Too little time is spent on amends is so important. No, I mean, I could. There are so many different kinds of amends. I'm just trying to think. Just give me a second. I may have examples here.
Hey, while you're looking, I'd like to just suggest something. And that is, for me, a daily review at night. My sponsor last year suggested I record that, you know, pages 84 to 86. And I have trouble going to sleep at night. But that is what I've done the last year. I'm on my phone and I listen to steps, my recording of pages 84 to 86. I listen to it, I do my review, and I'll tell you, I haven't ever done a 10th step every night, and I do it every night. It's pretty easy.
Yeah. I think it is pretty easy, yeah. Okay, because no one would have heard that who's listening to the recording, you're talking about sort of listening to pages 84 and 85 every night as a way of going to sleep and clearing your mind. And, yeah, thank you. I'm just trying to think about amends. I've already talked about the examples I've given. I've given this book I've written. So I'm just. There's so many difficult amends. That, you know, I had a sponsee who walked out of a restaurant in a small town in India without paying because she and her companion were unhappy with the service, and that bothered her for the 20 years until she brought it up. And she didn't remember the name of the restaurant. She knew the town. And she found an OA group in that town and sent money to them and asked them to spend it properly. Many years ago, I worked as a page in a library in Chicago, and I screwed up photocopying that I was supposed to do, and I didn't admit that the 200 pages that I screwed up were mine. And I sent them $25, you know. And then there was a reunion of the group of us who had been pages at that time 50 years later, and I admitted what I had done, and I said, I'm not sure that maybe I should pay more. And the director of the institute says, no, that's fine with me, you know, so I felt good. I think it's hard to talk about amends because I think they're very difficult at times, but I think an amends is appropriately, something like, this is, for people who are victims, an amends to the victimizer is not something that you really should undertake without real careful analysis of whether harm would result. But the thought of the amends, the willingness to make it is, I am sorry that I have allowed you to live rent-free in my mind. I am sorry that the abuses that you did to me have continued to abuse me and thus have continued to abuse others I love. And I'm sorry that I have allowed you to live in my mind like that. I mean, of course, you wouldn't say that to a person without really thinking whether you should. And it depends a lot on where that person is. I am sorry that I did not immediately call the police. I am sorry that these are the kinds of amends that you might think of doing. But you might also think of doing other amends, like what my friends did about announcing it or telling the truth. Certainly telling the truth to those you love about why you have been unable to give affection is something that you might want to think about. And finally admitting that what happened to you happened and that it wasn't your fault and that you have taken a shame or a guilt on you that is not warranted. Having that guilt lifted is an amends to the person who did it, because that person is no longer beating you up. You're standing up. I mean, these are difficult things. So I'm more than happy in the little time I have left between the time we finish and the time I have to catch the plane to talk to anyone, or you can email me through that website. There's a place to click on, and I'd be happy to help. I've been in program many years. I've been in relapse for about a year. I keep praying for willingness and surrender. What else to do in the meantime? Every day I break my abstinence starting around midday. I did that yesterday. But so I think I've handled all the ones in the thing. I'm not going to handle any more. If you want to talk to me later, either grab me before I leave or email me. I'm happy to arrange appointments for phoning. The phone that my telephone number is my wife's number as well, so I try not to keep it up. I like to make appointments. I'm not in love with the telephone, but I'm more than willing to do Skype or anything like that. So it is 10:25. Okay, thanks.